Welcome back, everyone, to another edition of The Moving Screen. I am Brendan Quinn of The Athletic. I'm here with Dylan Burkhart of umhoops.com. Coming off a week where Michigan picked up another impressive win, and Michigan State kind of showed its two sides a little bit. Dylan, let's jump right into it this week. I want to actually start with Michigan State. Because it seems like, I don't know if it's a Jekyll and Hyde situation. I don't know if it's a, I can't figure out how good Michigan State is or could be at this point. And I'm kind of curious to see where you come down on that issue right now.
So that Louisville game, well, I do appreciate going off the outline from the opening jump of the podcast. That's a great way to just get rolling this morning. But that kind of fits for how the Louisville game went on.
Can I make a confession? Go ahead. Can I make a confession? Yeah. I haven't looked at the blueprint.
I'm not surprised in the slightest. But let's talk Michigan State Louisville since that's where we're at. That game was a bit of a disaster, sort of like the start of this podcast. Yep. But I think it's sort of symbolic of what Michigan State is at this point and maybe where they would be vulnerable. Louisville's a team that gets the free throw line a lot and then was able to turn Michigan State over. And the end of that game, you just had sort of a perfect storm of what could go wrong for Michigan State. You were there. What did you kind of think of the situation there?
Yeah, I mean, the slow starts, I'm not sure if there's a unifying theory on why State is starting games as poorly as they are. It doesn't make that much sense. It happened against Texas. It should have bit them in the ass then, but Texas completely came undone, and then Winston and Langford made everything they put up. But yeah, in this game, they couldn't overcome, you know, playing a true road game, a start like that. With the early turnovers, and I think they had six turnovers in the first 10 minutes of that game at Louisville. The shooting, like, everything that they do coming into a game is bad. I think in the first half at Louisville, they had, like, they shot 40% and had like 32% turnover percentage. And Langford and Winston were combined like 2 for 11 or 2 for 10 in the first half. I can't figure out what's happening early in games. Do you see anything on that?
I don't know about the starts, but you can take away and you say they start slow. They had the game basically won if they don't throw the ball away at the end of regulation.
True.
And that's with their point guard, all Big Ten, Cash Swinston, fouls out. Everything went wrong, and they still should have won a game on the road against a team that's probably better than people gave them credit for at the time.
I think Louisville is not good at all.
They went, and they followed that up with a win at Seton Hall.
Well, I don't know. I watched that game at a couple points. I just turned to someone sitting next to me. I'm like, this Louisville team is, like, they're scrappy. They play their asses off, so they're going to get wins and all that. But I'm just saying, talent-wise, like, they're not anything close to a typical Louisville team. And that place was packed and fired up and all that stuff and great environment. But, okay, Cassius Winston. You cannot foul out of that game if you're Cassius Winston. And he commits a bad foul at the end of the first half for no reason on one of the final possessions, and then follows that up by committing another foul on the first possession of the second half. This is a junior who has played like 80 career college games. I'm a big Cassius Winston fan. I've always thought that he could be an All-American if everything comes together, and there is something impeding like that bridge to what he can be to what he is. Have you figured out what it is, or am I crazy?
I don't see any reason. He didn't record a single defensive rebound in that game, and he fouls out going for a defensive rebound. It's just
that's a great point.
They don't need that. I mean, do what you need to do, right? There's no reason he should be trying to play 40 minutes because they need every bit of him on offense. Right. I don't know that. Yeah, he's not a great defender. He's never going to prove that he's a great defender. Like, that shouldn't be his goal. Just that you can't make that play as a junior star of the team point guard, right? Like,
it's yes.
You can't really even explain it at this point, to be honest.
Right, and like I don't know if it's a matter of like someone needs to sit him down and have a conversation. I don't know if it's something that he needs to hear. I don't know, but like even I sat with him after the game in the locker room, and I'm like, "Hey man, can you kind of talk me through what was going through your head on those fouls?" And he just goes, "Yeah, I can't do that. I don't know why it happened." And like, it's not my place to be like, "Well, dude, you know, you've been here. There's no." Like, that's not a good answer, you know? But, I mean, he does own up to it, and he put Foster Lawyer in a terrible situation. You know, you're already without McQuaid. Now Winston fouls out, and Foster Lawyer, who, I mean, frankly, is just not ready to play in a situation like that. You can't leave a freshman kind of out in the open like that. It's a bad spot, and it's a troubling thing, just because the thing that Michigan State has is experience, and these guys who have been there and played in these games, and they are playing games like they've never been there. Ward does just a lot of bonehead stuff still. Langford, I think, is trying to do everything, which is a detriment, right? And then Winston is just still not kind of the guy yet. And I'm not sure. I think this tonight's game against Iowa is really interesting because Iowa's pretty good and Iowa's coming off a loss. And it's a tough turnaround for them. You know, what a game was on Friday night, right? Against Wisconsin.
Friday night at home against Wisconsin, yeah.
That's a tight turnaround. That's pretty tough.
They're both on the same turnaround. And I'm a little worried that Iowa's house of cards might be crumbling down here a little bit after a couple early season wins.
They got
beat pretty handedly at home by Wisconsin, who I think Wisconsin's really good, but I'm curious to see. I wonder if they want to run up and down going to the Breslin against the Michigan State team that hasn't really played a big home game this year. Seems like a kind of a disaster spot for Iowa coming up. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't say that Wisconsin beat them handily. I mean, it was 72-66, but it was a game. Like, they basically – Wisconsin just went on a late run. But, like, Iowa was up in the second half, if I remember correctly. I watched a little bit of the game. I was really impressed by Ethan Happ's passing, but that's a conversation for our power ranking situation. But I think Iowa can give them some run, and like it, you know, does Tyler Cook, what does he get against this front court? I'm not sure, but he's a monster because he's definitely faster than I remember. I don't know about you. I mean, he's always been a really athletic guy, but he looked super quick when I was watching that Wisconsin game. And Iowa's got some guys, man, and they can run with Michigan State. And you know, who turns it over more in this game? Because you know, Iowa can play without turning the ball over, and Michigan State is proving that it can't play without turning the ball over. So that's a recipe for an upset sometimes.
I think it also sets up to be another foul fest.
Yes.
Michigan State's really struggled to keep people off the free throw line, and Iowa's first in the country in free throw rate. So expect a lot of – that's the same thing we saw at Louisville. Expect a lot of whistles because Michigan State has not really been able to not foul. Yeah. And I also – I was wondering what you think about how the rotation has played out with McQuaid out.
Yeah.
Kyle Arens played 41 minutes at Louisville, which is a crazy stat to me. But then you see that – you saw that he played really well, though, which
he did.
Probably a nice development. But how do you kind of see – like, is that depth – how would you kind of rate that the concern about the lack of backcourt depth if McQuaid goes down.
Yeah, like I mean, it seems like such a crazy conversation to have about Michigan State to talk about a lack of depth when they play so many guys typically, right? But yeah, not having McQuaid is definitely an issue. I'd still like to see probably Aaron Henry get a little bit more run. I'd like to maybe see Gabe Brown get a little bit more run. But Kyle Arnes, I thought he was really, really impressive at Louisville, because his ability to not only hit that wing three, but you know when he makes those back cuts, like he's quicker than McQuaid. I think he's a better catch and finish guy than McQuaid. Defensively, though, McQuaid's a better option. That's clear. And the fact that he's just a reliable guy, like he knows what he's doing, he knows where he's going.
He can run. He can bring the ball up the court in a pinch.
He can, yeah. I mean,
no one else really can.
Him as an emergency point guard. the fact that the backup point guard is also the emergency point guard is not a good situation. You're right there. But I don't know. Has there been an update on McQuaid for our Iowa that I missed this weekend?
I haven't seen one.
I don't think so.
I don't know. I just think it speaks to their sort of crunch of reliable options beyond Winston and Langford in the backcourt there, that they have front court depth and they've kind of been plagued by a lack of, I think, backcourt depth even last year, right? Even when they opted to go big, it wasn't always about the front court. It was that there weren't enough guys that you could put in there in the backcourt, which is I don't know if that the top two is really strong, but I don't know about beyond that. And it's sort of interesting to see where that plays out.
I'm sending a text message to see if we can get an update on McQuaid by the end of this podcast.
Live on pod report going on here.
Okay. There we go. Let's see if we get a response there. Back to the basis of this conversation, though. You know, what's Michigan State's ceiling right now for the season, now that we've seen them, right? This is the Big Ten preseason favorite, a preseason top 10 team. Where, first of all, I catch constant shit for picking Michigan State ahead of Michigan in my preseason poll. And I get it, people. I was wrong. Okay, relax. So, sorry, Dylan, back to you.
So the ceiling for Michigan State, I think we've seen it when they go to Vegas and win two games in pretty impressive fashion, right? Mm-hmm. They can beat good teams on neutral floors. We've also seen that they're still kind of figuring it out, right? They're not they can go, and that Kansas game was close, and I've seen it propped up as a close loss, but it was also a blowout for most of the game. So I think we know that it's not going to be smooth sailing, but I also think they have a long way to – there's a lot more that they can accomplish to improve, right? Like, you can see attainable things that they can do, and they're going to be a better team in January, February, March. So I think – I don't know. I think they're right in that next tier below Michigan. I don't really see any reason that you could say, oh, well, some other team in the league is right, significantly head and shoulders above them other than Michigan right now.
I would agree. At the same time, I was asked recently by someone, like, man, what's like the biggest adjustment Michigan State has to do? Or like, what do they need to play differently? Or what do they need to do differently? And it's like, other than, you know, not turning the ball over, not fouling as much, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I'm overreacting to that loss at Louisville, and the win at Rutgers is a pretty nice win, but I'm not sure. I'm just not sure what to make of State as a, you know, can they still go win the Big? Is this team still good enough to go win a Big Ten championship? Is kind of the question that I'm find myself kind of going back and forth on right now. But and we'll see. And this will be an interesting week. Right.
Saturday might give us more answers.
Yeah,
because Florida hasn't really put it together this year, but that's a tough road game, which we don't often see from Michigan State in the non-conference. Mm-hmm. And we will learn a lot, I think, about And Florida is coming off of a game against West Virginia, too. So Florida will be battle tested. They won't be shocked, but they've also lost to Florida State, Oklahoma, and Butler. So
right.
They've played a lot of good teams. They haven't really proven they can beat them yet.
Yeah, they picked up a win. I guess Stanford's their best win, and Stanford almost won at Kansas, so maybe Stanford isn't.
But when your best win is an almost win, it's not a great best win.
Touche. But for the point of that measure, Wisconsin pounded Stanford, which is Florida's best win. Now we're really connecting some dots here, but I will be curious to see that game. Gainesville's a tough place to play. I've been there. Back from my days covering the University of Tennessee, it'll be interesting, and it'll be another game where I'm trying to think of how Mike White plays. Do they get up and go? Do they go back and forth? Do you know?
They don't necessarily play fast, but they turn teams over.
Okay. Tempo is very slow. They're 331st in the country.
They play slow, but you see that 24% forced turnover rate, and that's a little scary for Michigan State, I would say.
For sure. All right. Let's hop over to Michigan, which is it's quite the freight train at this point. How good is this team, Dylan?
I mean, they haven't played a close game, and it's December, yeah. And they've played three top 25 teams, a couple away from home or on a neutral. I mean, they're rocking and rolling. It's hard to. Michigan fans have gotten really good at using Bart Torvik's site to come up with the perfect date range that makes Michigan look like the best team ever.
Mm-hmm.
They've managed, I think, now to filter out the first couple games of the season to take out Michigan's kind of slow start, and then also take out the Duke blowout of Kentucky. And now, best team. I think they're really good. I don't know. It's hard to really nitpick. Early on, we could say they're amazing on defense, but they can't really score. Now they're scoring like an elite team also, right. Which is dangerous. I also think some of that comes from playing at home.
It does.
Playing at home against a good team, it's a lot easier to get the offense. But they shot 50% from three this week in two games against Purdue and North Carolina. Earlier in the year, we were saying we don't know if they'll be able to make double-digit threes in a game. So,
right. And offensively, I think the game on Saturday was quite telling because looked awesome in the first half, right? And it's a fair statement to say, like, I don't know if they're beatable if they're making threes, right? And that was the first half. You know, Purdue was trying everything and it didn't matter. In the second half, though, they go 7 minutes without making a basket and they looked pretty offensively. Inept might be a strong word, but they looked like the team that might struggle the way that maybe we anticipated them struggling, right? That they looked like that squad. But then lo and behold, they just didn't let Purdue get back into it. Even still, they went that whole stretch, and the closest it got was 13 points, right?
12 points.
12.
They scored two baskets in the last 14 minutes of the game.
That's incredible. And that is just
their lead went down, ridiculous. Decreased by a point.
That's
some of that was at the free throw line, but it was just Purdue finally figured out how to stop them. I also think Purdue started playing some dudes who would actually defend, mm-hmm. which hurt its offense. But to score two baskets in 14 minutes and not even really give up any chunk of the lead is quite telling. And even still, with that offensive struggle, they scored 1.2 points per possession, which is going to win you games regardless. And they still have not allowed a point per possession in a game. So they haven't played a close game. These have all just been blowouts. And the fourth quarter, the second half of the second half, hasn't really mattered in a game yet. The big moments in Michigan's season have been when North Carolina and Purdue cut a 20-point lead to 12, and then someone had to make a basket. That's not really crunch time,
yeah,
necessarily.
And the thing is, this team, because they have so many options offensively, that when there is a run, that they have responded really well, I guess, when there are these moments of like, oh man, I wonder if they make this a game, you know. And at this time last year, you know, that lead gets down to like five, right? It gets really dangerous, and everyone's scrambling. And now it's, you know, Brazdeek. I feel like, did he end the run that North Carolina went on in the second half of the last game? Because I know it was Teske this time, where he, you know, rattles in a three, dunks the ball, makes a couple free throws. It was Teske snapping the Purdue's runs on Saturday. Was it Iggy on against North Carolina?
It was Iggy kind of started the run in the first half that gave Michigan the big lead, right, against North Carolina, and those were the big baskets. I'm trying to think. I want to say it was a Matthews corner three.
Okay.
That might have been against North Carolina. I don't recall exactly, but
so the point remains, right? Right.
Yeah, and what we've seen is, it seems like every week with this team, we're kind of talking about a different guy. Mm-hmm. If you remember coming out of Connecticut, it was all about Isaiah Livers and everything he gives Michigan. Isaiah Livers has had a really quiet week and got in foul trouble and barely played. And now we're talking about Jordan Poole and John Teske as breakout stars. And we've kind of gone through the whole Charles Matthews at Villanova. I mean, it's just every person on the team is basically maxing out, I guess, their role, you could say.
Yes, and with that, I think Michigan, the AP poll, that's not Izzo, damn. the AP poll hasn't come out yet, but I'd put Michigan at like fourth in the country right now. I would put them ahead I'd put them ahead of Virginia. So the only teams that I think that you could reasonably say are better than them right now are, in no particular order, Gonzaga, Duke, and I guess you'd still have to put Kansas up there. Although if you put Michigan and Kansas on a court right now, I'm taking Michigan to win that game. But ranking wise, you probably put Kansas ahead of them. That win over Tennessee is really impressive. So what say you on that for all the people who constantly ask about rankings?
I have a lot of problems with rankings in general, but
you know, the right show now, ends with a power ranking, right?
I know, but we just that's fair. I think they're a consensus top five team, I would say. Mm-hmm. I think that if you were taking them to play someone tomorrow, you'd probably boost them up a little more. If you're talking about who is going to have the best chance to win the national championship, maybe you say, oh, this team is going to be better later. I guess the question is Michigan peaking in late November, early December, or is there still more room for this team to grow? It depends on your philosophy on ranking teams, but Michigan keeps winning, and they haven't played a close game. If you're just ranking what they've done this year, it's hard to argue with putting them at least in the top four or five.
That sounds right to me. Here's a question. Who would you say is the MVP of this team right now?
It's tough. It's
a telling silence.
It is. I mean, everyone plays a role, and you can explain what everyone has done in the rotation that's made this team right now better than last year's team. But I don't know that you could say, you can't go into a game and say, we're going to stop player X. There's no Carson Edwards. There's no top person, right? Because if you're going to say, we're going to do everything to shut down Charles Matthews, well, honestly, your best chance might be to let Charles Matthews shoot and hope he has an off day. Because mm-hmm. then if you're going to focus everything, you got other guys. I mean, I think that just goes back to, we've seen a different person every week. This week, John Teske was Michigan's MVP because he completely changed games with his defense around the rim. And that's something that Michigan hasn't ever had really under Beilein. My Teske stat of the week, when he is on the court, teams are shooting 31% on two-pointers against Michigan.
Goodness gracious.
And it's tough to win when teams can't score inside. That's just really the foundation of everything they've done.
Right. I mean, when you're able to, on one hand, stop the point of attack at point guard and also then have the front line be what it is, like, that is really the most if you talk about Michigan's defense, I think it's, you know, the three most simplistic bullet points are they stop the point guard, they have the low post locked down, and they stay in front of their man at every single position. You know, when I had the opportunity to go into North Carolina's locker room and talk to those guys about what it was like playing Michigan, the level of, like, almost exasperation was, it was pretty high. And this is a team that, North Carolina plays real teams, right? Like, they play Virginia twice a year. They know what it's like to play pestering, annoying defenses. And the thing that every single guy there said was, you know, they stay in front of the ball and they have Teske back there just swatting shots away. It's overly simplistic, but it's not, because that's just what they do.
And the underrated thing about that is that Iggy Brazdeikis and Jordan Poole are staying in front of their guy, right? Everyone knew that Xavier, Charles, and Teske could do that on defense, but those two were huge question marks on that side of the ball in the summer. I mean, it was hard to ever even see that coming.
Right.
Jordan Poole's taking charges, walling up at the rim. So, yeah, he's making all his threes now, but I think the fact that they kept playing him early in the year when he was 1 of 10 from 3. Jordan Poole, as a freshman, when he was 1 of 10 from 3, would be basically a worthless player. He'd be a negative.
Right.
And now he's still playing heavy minutes, and that was really telling, I think, to how this team just comes together on defense.
Here's some breaking news. Fred Hoiberg got fired in Chicago, and Jim Boylan is being promoted to interim head coach, former Michigan State guy, right?
How breaking news is really effective on a recorded podcast.
I think we're on point today. Let's make sure we touch on Teske here before we move on to rankings. I can't believe this guy's ascent to being what he is. And I posed a question in a story that I wrote Saturday that is I want to ask you. And it's completely absurd, but can you make a case that Michigan is actually better off that Mo Wagner went pro a year early? All things considered, now that we've seen what this team has become.
It's definitely a different defense. I think Teske has really done two things this week that I didn't even think he was capable of, which is A, play 30, 35 minutes in a game against legit teams. Like, I think he did that last year against Detroit, maybe came close. And B, all of a sudden he started rebounding.
Mm.
The first couple weeks of the year, he wasn't rebounding. He grabbed 6, 5, and 9 defensive boards over the last three games. He grabbed 15 in the first 5 games of the year. So all this, and I remember Beilein saying probably around Thanksgiving, we're really challenging him to start actually getting on the glass and grabbing boards, and he's doing that. And that was really the one thing that Mo did defensively that they would lose. But I think everyone knew that Mo was a defensive liability. I mean, it was well documented that he was one of the worst one-on-one post-up defenders in the country last year. So ideally, you'd have both options, right?
Right.
I don't know that they get – I think there's ways that you can defend Michigan that teams will come across that can still give them pause, whereas I think when Mo was Mo, it was really tough to even stop Michigan at certain times, right?
But so at the same time – and, like, I'm not saying that this is for sure that Michigan would be better for Wagner. The fact that it's even a conversation is ludicrous. But here's the thing. You know, when you have a guy like Mo Wagner, like, Mo required shots. Like, you got to get Mo Wagner 10, 11, 12, 13 shots per game. The reason this Michigan team really works, I feel like, is because no one requires shot. Everyone just takes kind of what comes to them. And you don't have to dial anybody up. Now, they certainly do that, and they dial up Charles and blah, blah, blah. But, like, I don't feel like anyone on this team, like, has to get 12 shots a game. You know what I mean? And that's kind of part of the special sauce, I think, that is making this thing go. And Teske's the perfect example of it. he doesn't need to shoot at all, and he changes the game. But then when you need him, suddenly he goes and puts up 20. What did he finish with against Purdue?
He finished with 17 points.
17, yeah.
Eight boards.
Right.
In 31 minutes.
The fact that that's an option against Purdue, of all teams, like, you know, Matt Painter's got to be just scratching his head. At one point in the first half, he just put both of his hands on his knees and leaned forward, and it looked like a guy who wishes he was coaching the other team. Let's put it that way.
Even he's Michigan has, for a few years now, just had some epic offensive performances against Purdue. And mm-hmm. Purdue does, like, I almost feel like it's not Purdue's fault. I feel like they do a lot of creative things to try to stop Michigan, and it just comes. Even Purdue, when they win, they won that game that was in the 90s at home. I mean, they just haven't been able to stop Michigan's offense. They're the two of the three longest tenured coaches, and you feel like they know each other better than the other coach knows themselves, and have found ways to take advantage of that.
Yeah, that game in West Lafayette last year was like still one of the most incredible college basketball games I've ever seen. Because it's not like the teams weren't playing defense and they just made everything. There was like at one point in the second half they traded like 12 or 13 straight made baskets. It was just the highest level. But you're right. Yeah, it's always a great game when those two get on the court, which is great that the Big Ten has them only playing once this year. So I hope you enjoyed Michigan-Purdue, because unless they play in the Big Ten tournament, that's all you get. So,
Matt Payne is probably happy about that.
I would think so. Let me move Otis. He's snoring over here.
I hear that.
Sorry. It's quite the podcast. All right,
do we want to touch on Northwestern?
We do.
Or
we do.
South Carolina.
You're heading to that game, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and I'll be taking the train out tomorrow. Looking forward to that.
I've actually never been to Welsh Ryan, so I'll just get to see its updated form.
Well, this is very different than what I remember. Welsh Ryan was this old, dark, dusty. It felt like it was like an erector set with stone walls around it. But now it's completely redone. I'm very, very curious to see it. But so Northwestern took Indiana down to the wire in a game this weekend that I don't think anyone really quite saw that coming. But how good is this Northwestern team? And could this do they at least have the potential to be a team that could sneak up and bite Michigan if Michigan is a little cold and maybe tired legs too?
Northwestern's kind of been one of Michigan's gotcha teams over the last decade or whatnot. So they've certainly had some rough moments in Evanston. I wouldn't necessarily peg a team that really struggles to score as the secret sauce to upset Michigan, but they also have some experience and they're going to play tough defensively. So I don't see Michigan just carving them up like they did against North Carolina and Purdue. But it'll be, I think Vic Law has been tremendous, but you don't want your best player to necessarily be matched up against Charles Matthews. That's not a great setup for success. And then you don't want to have, basically they don't have a point guard. And that would be a little bit of a concern when you're coming up against Xavier Simpson on defense. So I don't know that they necessarily match up particularly well, but it's still a road game. Michigan still only played one road game, and things happen on the road, especially for a team that hasn't really faced any adversity yet this year.
You had the theory that they could be better without Bryant McIntosh.
We're not quite there yet.
No, they're not there.
Work in progress. They have been sort of back to what they were defensively 2 years ago. Last year their defense kind of fell apart, but I think that their defense has been solid, and they battled at Indiana. I was watching that game. I mean, Indiana was kind of lucky to get out of there with a win, and that's on the road in Assembly Hall. That's not an easy venue by any means.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
I'm curious to see Northwestern in person. The way that they finished last year, like, I don't think they were ever quite as bad as they showed last year, and then the wheels just went completely off the rails late. Like, they've got some guys. The player I've always been curious about at Northwestern is Anthony Gaines, and it seems to me that they've been waiting for a long time for him to be what the staff envisioned, which was like a primary scorer, and it's never happened. He's just not, but like, if you look at his minutes, I think he's playing a lot, but he's just not the guy that people quite envisioned. I heard from two different NBA scouts going into his freshman year, unsolicited, that Anthony Gaines was going to be really good at Northwestern, and I think the staff thought the same thing, and it hasn't happened. So I'll be curious to see him in person. But yeah, I feel like most people who watch Northwestern like Vic Law, like Derek Pardon. But I don't really think that they're good enough to beat Michigan. And I don't think Michigan is in any way scared of going on the road. I think they relish it, if anything. Proof being that Villanova game, where they kind of went in there with a sense of defiance that I think really good teams that play on the road have. So that's it. And then South Carolina will be in the house on Saturday for hopefully the last time that these two teams ever face each other. Have you seen the Gamecocks there?
They have not won back-to-back games yet this year, which isn't great. Losses to Stony Brook, Providence, and Wofford. I don't really think this is a great team. They blew out George Washington when we were after the Michigan game there, and I just went out and saw the score and went back to my seat.
In front of maybe 75 people.
Families and friends.
Families and friends at the Mohegan Sun for Thanksgiving. It was quite a matchup.
But I can't see them going on the road and beating Michigan. I think Northwestern's a much tougher test there for Michigan.
The real storyline here is that South Carolina, which is not good, has to play Michigan and Virginia back-to-back. Which, I don't know, that might be like one of the most interesting stories in college basketball this season, is one team having to do that.
Similar defenses to prepare for. Smart scheduling.
Well, I think that's one way of putting it. All I know is I'm hoping to get Frank Martin on the phone after that Virginia game to talk about the two of those teams, because it's fascinating. But I would not call it smart scheduling by any means, because they also have Clemson after that, and Clemson isn't bad. So South Carolina probably down on the mat, I think, entering January this year. All right, you got any other takes on Michigan?
I think we covered everything. Okay. Let's hit the Big Ten here.
All right. So power rankings, as any listener from last week knows, we basically do a draft-style power ranking where I kind of take my first team, or Dylan takes his first team, and we just go back and forth. So this week I was charged with picking the first team, and that was obviously Michigan. So I don't think we need to dive into why, but Dylan, you had number two. Who you got?
I've got Wisconsin. Really nice win for them at Iowa. They beat NC State at home. They look the real deal. It's basically just Ethan Happ and Dimitri Trice getting all of the baskets. Trice has been shooting insane, 58% from three. Not sure that's sustainable, but it has been impressive early. They also, they've been in the news a lot because Brad Davison took four charges against NC State, including one that was essentially helped ice the game away, and it's been very controversial. How do you feel on a charge gate?
I'm more concerned that it's a thing now, because I don't know how fair that is to Davidson, right? So anytime he falls on his back now, the refs are basically in a lose-lose situation. It's like you call a charge, you're now feeding into this narrative, and if you don't call it, it's almost like you're calling it without or with like a sense of, I guess, I hate to use the word again, but defiance. Because Davidson's not going to stop doing it, right?
It's what he does.
It's what he does. So, you know, the refs are going to have to – most of them are probably 50-50, as every charge is in basketball. How officials deal with him going forward is going to be a storyline. And I'm not sure what the answer is, because he is a good defender and he does get in position. And I don't know what you do with it.
I've got a stat for you.
Here we go.
I've got offensive foul stats.
This is why you're here.
Wisconsin has drawn 28 offensive fouls in 8 games. How many have they been called for? 15. That's a gap of 13 offensive fouls.
Essentially turnovers. Yeah.
They're leading the Big Ten in that stat. Nebraska's last at -9. The only other team, there's two teams, Rutgers and Minnesota are +8. So Wisconsin is basically, they have a five offensive foul gap in terms of offensive foul margin this year. And I mean, you're going to say either they're really good at not taking them, or Brad Davidson is just that good at drawing offensive fouls. And whatever they're doing, it's working, because everyone else is sort of sandwiched in that middle area. You'd think you'd be about 50-50, right? It seems like sort of a call that happens on both ends of the floor. That's what I've got on Wisconsin.
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to go away either. They're just going to keep doing it because it's obviously working. And I feel like officials are more inclined to let them do it. They're going to call it all day. So it's a lot of it's on the other team, too. Like, you got to know what you're getting into. You can't just run your normal stuff or just go to the basket the way you will. Like, the way that Michigan plays downhill a lot of times, the Michigan-Wisconsin game is going to be pretty fascinating to see. Like, are there just going to be discarded Wisconsin bodies all over the court from trying to draw charges against Brazdeikis and Matthews?
Charles Matthews will be called for an offensive foul in that game. Yeah, on the first dribble handoff of the game.
100%. You know, within the first minute, and then Michigan's going to have to switch to a completely different rotation. This is guaranteed. That is free money betting right there. One thing on Nebraska, I think one of my favorite plays in college basketball is the Ethan Happ tip kickout pass, where he'll have two guys around him, and they'll lob an entry pass into him. And he catches it with one hand and flips it back out to the opposite wing for an open three. It's tremendous. And you have to love the way Ethan Happ plays. So number three, is that where we're at, right? Number three in the power mm-hmm. ranking. I have Nebraska, which I was a little uneasy about early on. And it's kind of, you know, give me reason to believe Nebraska. Winning at Clemson was pretty impressive. That's good stuff. That's a good win for them. That's a good win for the league. And then to follow it up by not laying an egg against Illinois, but instead destroying them as they should have, is impressive stuff. I like Nebraska. I want to see them go get a win at Minnesota this week and then follow it up with another good non-conference game for the league against Creighton next weekend. I like them. They're top 40, I believe, in offensive and defensive efficiency. Let me pull up the numbers here. The other one that I got circled is there's 60% on twos and then holding teams under 40% on twos. It's pretty good. That's a sign of a pretty good team on both sides.
Their defense is similar to Michigan's in that they don't really give up any three-point attempts, and they've been really good defending inside.
Yeah.
My one concern here is that really the two competent teams they played this year in Texas Tech and Clemson both scored the ball really well against them.
Mm-hmm.
Their field goal stats are kind of propped up by like Mississippi Valley State with a 19.9 effective field goal percentage and a few early games like that. I'm worried to see how that plays out.
Clemson scored 66 and Texas
66 on 60 possessions.
Well, Texas Tech scored 70 on. I mean, I know they play low possession games, but it's not like they're getting 80 on them, and they did hold Seton Hall to 57 points.
Yep. So we'll see. I just there's a little bit of concern there for me. I think they're a good defensive team. I want to see how they play against good offensive teams, and we'll see. I think blowing out Illinois at home is a great way for them to keep building that confidence, though. And I think I wouldn't be surprised to see them go win at Minnesota either.
Yeah. I mean, if we're talking tests, then it's perfect because they got Creighton next weekend, and Creighton can score. They can score the ball. Their defense isn't much. They gave up like 150 points to Gonzaga, but they also scored 92 on Gonzaga. They scored 92, sorry. So they can get buckets, so it'll be interesting to see Nebraska in that game. All right, number four you have?
I've got Michigan State next. They have two losses, but they haven't lost at home, and there's a lot of teams in the league kind of in this next group that either have lost at home or it's easy to look at sort of the new things other teams have done, but Michigan State, I think, is still right there in this group, even with the overtime loss to Louisville. I don't think that really changes that much in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, and I still think this kind of goes back to the original conversation of how good can this team be. I feel like I know I cover Michigan State, so like I nitpick these two more than anybody, but I feel like an outsider who might see Michigan State probably sees a very different Michigan State than we do. If you know, I just talked about Nebraska being top 40 in offensive and defensive efficiency. Well, Michigan State has played some really good teams, and they're almost top 25.
Top 30 in both.
Yeah, top 30 in both. It is a good team that just has some rather glaring issues with it, but all the pieces are there. So, I don't know. We'll see. Number five, I had Ohio State. Still don't quite know what to make of Ohio State in terms of like what its ceiling is. And, I did think that they were going to beat Syracuse last week, and they did not, obviously lost by 10, but, bounced back with a nice win over Minnesota.
20 point win over your team there.
Easy. Yeah, but you know, Ohio State still has those wins over Cincinnati and Creighton in their back pocket, which will look really good come March. Pretty good start for a team that I think most. I know I had them in the lower half of the league. I think this year, losing Bates Diop and kind of rebuilding around a mishmash of characters, but they're pretty good. Chris Holtmann is an outstanding coach. What do you make of these guys so far?
Had the best defense in the league last year, and they look pretty damn good on defense this year. I think the scoring will kind of come and go, but they're going to be good enough defensively to sort of grind out a top half NCAA tournament resume. It's what it looks like to me right now.
Yeah, I'd like to see them more. I really haven't sat and watched a full Ohio State game since the Cincinnati game, because you know last week's game against Syracuse was Wednesday night, so that was during the North Carolina game. Was that game on Wednesday? Yeah. And then I missed last night's game against Minnesota. So I would like to sit and watch them play, but they don't really have another notable game until late December when they get UCLA. That's in like 2 weeks. That's, of course, is assuming that they take care of Illinois this week, which I certainly imagine so. So who you got at six?
I've got Indiana, got blown out at Duke, which I think just about any team in the country would get blown out at Duke. But they also managed to hold on and beat Northwestern at home, which wasn't pretty, but that's a win that a win is a win, even if it's a bit dicey at the end. The bad news continues to be injuries. Yeah. Juwan Morgan went down at the end of that game. And, I mean, they've already played a bunch of different lineups this year. Now they might be playing more. It's just, you worry about a team like this that can't get completely healthy, and if they run into problems where they can't quite ever figure it out, it'll be interesting to they go on the road to Penn State tomorrow, and that Penn State team is tough and should be able to probably give them a game on the road. So I don't know. What do you think, Indiana? Are you
well? Definitely a big stretch. I mean, Penn State, Louisville, Butler. Those are their next three games, and if they're without Juwan Morgan, I'm not sure how that's going to look. But they're top 10 in the country in effective field goal percentage. They do a lot of things well, but like if they're without Morgan, it's going to be okay. Well, let's just see how good Romeo Langford is.
Give the ball to number zero and get out of the way.
100%. You have to. I don't know. I don't know what to make of them. But you know, getting that win over Northwestern was really big while facing a bit of controversy. And if your only two losses are at Duke and a 1-point loss at Arkansas, like Indiana, I don't think has done anything to dissuade any thoughts that they could be, you know, a top four team in the Big Ten, certainly. So we'll see. Yeah,
and that Marquette win is held up, but if they're without Juwan Morgan, it's just
the this other is a huge pieces week
on the roster haven't really come together, I would say. Romeo's been good, Morgan's been good, but you kind of expected more from someone, and there hasn't really been that someone, and that's scary if you're looking at losing another player to injury.
Yeah. So it's a huge stretch for them. I would hope Morgan is back because these three games I feel like could be a really good measuring stick if you see them at, you know, if they're not, if it's just basically Romeo and a bunch of guys, this three game stretch is pretty useless in terms of gauging what they are. Okay, we got number seven, the team I'll be seeing this evening in East Lansing, Iowa. 6-1, those wins over Oregon and UConn early, and then a recent loss to Wisconsin. But another team that has a really big week for itself and for the league. Talking about a game at Michigan State on a tight turnaround, and then a home game against Iowa State, which is always a pretty great rivalry matchup between those two. And Iowa State's pretty good this year. Be really curious to see what they got. So the question was always defense with Iowa after last year's debacle. What have you seen defensively from these guys so far?
My biggest concern with their defense is that it's going to start looking like last year's defense. I was running a bunch of stats about points in the paint allowed, doing something about Michigan, and Michigan's leading the Big Ten in points in the paint allowed. Who do you think's last in points in the paint allowed?
I have a guess.
The Iowa Hawkeyes.
Well, that's not a good proposition for a game at Michigan State.
This is a really risky week for them because all of a sudden 6-0 can start to look like 6-3, and then a bad Northern Iowa team on a neutral floor on a short turnaround, and then you're just looking at, oh, here we go again. Mm-hmm. Maybe they prove me wrong, but I've sort of that risky territory here with Iowa where they barely beat Pittsburgh at home. Pittsburgh's not good. I don't know. I'm a lot more skeptical on Iowa than I was a couple weeks ago.
It's fair. But at the same time, I mean, if they go in and pull out a win at Breslin tonight, I wouldn't be completely stunned, right? Like, I certainly think that they got some chops to them to be able to pull that off. But I think they've lost like 9 of their last 10 games in that building. I mean, winning at Michigan State's a big ask. So I feel like that's the bigger game for them this week is Iowa State. You know, you get a team like that on your home court, they got to get that win, especially after kind of letting an opportunity against Wisconsin slip away. I mean, they had Wisconsin at home. That's a game. They if they win that, you're talking like, damn, you know, are they a Big Ten contender at this point? So I'd be more curious to see the Iowa State game this week than Michigan State, because I do think Michigan State takes care of them tonight.
I also think we overrate home and home wins.
Yeah.
Wisconsin at home is not like a, oh my God, it would be a huge win. It's a good win.
A really good win.
A good win.
You got to win somewhere.
And you got to win at home. And sometimes you got to win on the road. Uh-huh. Speaking of never leaving home, we're going with Maryland next. They lost to Virginia in a close game that probably surprised me, and then grinded out a win over Penn State. This team's been good. I'm skeptical of them being tested. I'm really fascinated to see the game on Thursday at Purdue, because that's going to be against the Purdue team that really needs a win. And this is a Maryland team that's only played at Navy this year, so they haven't really gone away from home. They just sort of have to fall in the rankings around this spot. I still don't really know what to make of them.
Yeah, they've got some interesting questions around them. And I was talking to Don Marcus last week, who's their beat writer for the Baltimore Sun, and he was kind of telling me that they're in that weird area of, you know, with Bruno Fernando and Jalen Smith, there's these two natural big guys, and they're kind of in the spot that Michigan State has been in of, you know, do you play two bigs together? They're trying to, I think Maryland's still very much trying to figure out how it fits together. And with Fernando and Smith, those two are pretty interesting pieces. And I don't know if anyone really thought Smith was going to be quite as good as he is, but he scored double digits.
One of the higher rated recruits coming in the league.
I feel like there wasn't that much talk about him in the preseason, was there? I might have just completely whiffed on it, but he scored double digits in every game other than Virginia. He put up 16 on Penn State, on a Penn State team that has, you know, like they have a real front line. Like, they got real bodies down there. This isn't, you know, it's not some small team that you can just score over. He's really impressive. He could probably rebound at a little bit of a higher level, if anything. But what you do with those two together is kind of the missing puzzle piece of the conversation here.
Yeah, and it's hard when you're playing Morcell in the backcourt, and he can't really shoot. Anthony Cowan is only shooting 29% from three. They've had a couple freshmen come in and make some threes, but it's a lot easier to play two bigs if you can kick it out to knockdown shooters. When your sort of go-to wing shoots 14% from three-point range, it becomes a lot harder. So that'll be interesting to kind of see how it plays out as the season goes on, because they're shooting 32% from three as a team, which isn't great.
Yeah, I've never been a big Anthony Cowan guy, but I think they probably need a little bit more out of him if they're going to take a step forward. But tough week for them this week. They'll go out to Purdue on Thursday. Purdue coming off a loss, but I have no idea how that's going to play out. But all I know is I'm down to watch Cowan versus Carson Edwards, and that should be a pretty interesting matchup.
You got next.
I got next.
You've got next.
Oh, yeah, Purdue, speak of the devil. At number nine, I took Purdue. When you say Purdue, I feel like it's just Carson Edwards. The first half of that game was basically Carson Edwards dribbling around, taking contested jumpers, while Michigan was executing with five guys on the other end of the court, and that's basically an impossible way to play. I'm not sure what to make of Purdue's other pieces. I mean, I like Eastern a lot. But he just doesn't give you that much offensively. But when I say I like him a lot, I like that he can get boards and he can defend and he's athletic and blah, 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 blah. But he just doesn't give you much offensively. Give me a step.
I've got a big problem with the Purdue takes going around. There's a lot of hit pieces on Carson Edwards and how
he's like, really somehow good.
He's the problem. Like, the problem is that their offense is, but no, Carson Edwards isn't the problem. He's not going to be the last point guard to struggle against Xavier Simpson. The problem is this team can play no defense, and their defense is going to get, their numbers are going to look worse and worse as the year goes on, because no one, we talk about Michigan keeping guys in front. No one on that team can keep their guy in front of them in front. Everyone talked about Purdue switching and Michigan exploiting the switches. They're also just exploiting simple matchups. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't give up dribble penetration like they're giving up and survive on defense. And they're 315th in three-point rate allowed. That's basically saying that teams are just getting boatloads of open threes against them, because in Michigan's case, drive to the middle, kick out, easy basket. Mm-hmm. That I'm really worried about their defense, and I think that's a big concern for them with Maryland, Texas, and Notre Dame coming up next.
And a sneaky game against Belmont in late December at home. Belmont's a good team. I'm just saying, shout out to my mid-majors. But the question that I have for Purdue is, like, what does it look like in February, right? Like, how good, you know, how much can they figure out to be a decent team later in the year? Because it's going to take a while for this thing to come together. And I'm not sure what they can change or how good they can be. But they're hard to watch sometimes at this point, because it's Edwards is so good, but you know, Matt Painter said it after the game. It's even to this day, it's always kind of been the thing with him, is you just want 4 or 5 or 6 possessions back that he made a decision or took a bad shot, and it just happens. And it's because he's trying to do, it's only exasperated now because he doesn't have 4 senior studs around him who can all shoot lights out on threes when you could just get free assist on every single possession.
If you're going to complain about him making decisions, put one player on the court next to him that can make a decision.
I don't disagree.
I mean, I don't disagree. No one can do anything.
Yeah.
He's using 38% of their offensive possessions. He's going to make some bad decisions. He's the only one doing anything.
Right.
Don't know.
If your best option is Ryan Klein hitting an open three, that's not a feasible offensive system.
And that's basically what they're doing. So next up, I've got Minnesota, your favorite team, who I think you picked fourth or something last week. Went on the road to Ohio State and got blown out of the gym. They went 0 of 13 from three-point range. I think I saw a tweet that they're only the second team this year to not make a three-pointer.
Wow.
Not a great stat. And their half-court offense looked anemic in that game. And I think you got to give some credit to Ohio State because they've done that to other teams. But I don't know what the offensive ceiling is for this Minnesota team. They also lost at Boston College, who's not a great team, but did manage to knock off Oklahoma State in the football field up there as a little bit of a way to boost their shooting, I guess. They actually shot better in a football field than a basketball gym. So what do you do?
Oh, man. Minnesota. It's just killing me. The loss to BC, it was bad. That is a bad loss. Lose by 12
point loss
to BC. I mean, I know it's on the road, but man, you got to do better than that. They did, you know, that win over Oklahoma State's pretty good. But I don't know. I'm planning on watching this Minnesota-Nebraska game on Wednesday because that's a good matchup. And I think it will be pretty telling about Minnesota, and it's their last relevant game until January. For those keeping track, Minnesota finishes out the month with Arkansas State, North Florida, North Carolina A&T, and Mount St. Mary's. So another team that I don't want to hear anything from them when it comes to March and they go 10-10 in the Big Ten and are not in the conversation for an NCAA bid. You did it to yourself. So
the other problem they have is they had wins that looked pretty good over Utah, Texas A&M, and Washington early. Texas A&M is 2-4. They've also lost. They've beaten only Savannah State and South Alabama. They don't look like a great team. Utah also lost to Hawaii and Northwestern. And Washington is probably going to be a little better. But those wins, they were kind of against brand-name programs. So they look good early, but I don't know how well those are really going to hold up. And they don't have anything else left in the non-conference. So.
Right. And I would say that Washington comes out of this week probably looking like a much different team because they're going to get curb stomped by Gonzaga, and then they'll probably lose to Virginia Tech. That's 2 weeks out. But, I would agree with you that those early season wins will probably look a lot different. And I don't know. I have no more takes on Minnesota. They annoy the hell out of me. So
it's probably for the best.
All right. Moving on to number 11, Michigan's opponent this week, Northwestern. This is about where everyone had Northwestern preseason, and we're a month in, and they are, I think Northwestern is very much what everyone assumed Northwestern was going to be.
I don't know if that's fair. The take out of, I think Archie Miller said after the game, if they're the 13th best team in the Big Ten's pretty damn good, which is like, I think
Big Ten is good.
They're a top 50 KenPom team right now, and I don't know that we really expected that before the year, but we'll see. It's a little too early to buy stock.
Northwestern hasn't played anybody.
That's a fair take.
They haven't played anyone. New Orleans, American, Binghamton, Fresno State, LaSalle, Utah, Georgia Tech, and then they lost to Indiana this weekend. And their loss to Fresno State was 78-59. Northwestern's not good. These numbers, these are very empty numbers. Talk to me after next week when they lose a home game to DePaul or something. I don't think they're very good. So,
speaking of losing to DePaul, we got Penn State next. The Nittany Lions have the number 8 KenPom defense, but they are just 4-3. So they are not great scoring the ball, you could imagine, and they don't really have a lot going on for them that side of the ball, mostly because they can't really shoot. Lamar Stevens has been good. Josh Reeves has been good, but they just can't really get over that hump. Even their loss, like their losses have all been close, and I think they're competitive. And that's why I'm really interested to see. They haven't really had a good team at home yet, and Indiana's coming in there, and I think there's probably, safe to say, a little extra momentum and excitement in State College for basketball after winning the NIT last year, and see, that could be a tough.
I would like to say that, but it's proven historically that like it's only literally week to week in terms of basketball interest at Penn State.
They beat Virginia Tech last week.
I understand, but they also, I'm saying early season, if they don't lose to DePaul and Bradley, right, like they could have a home court advantage. But I would like to see some pictures of that monstrosity of a building for that Virginia Tech game and see what the crowd was like, because Penn State, it's basically like if you win 3 straight games, you can get fans. If you lose one game, it doesn't matter what you did the 30 games before that. People just don't show up. So what the crowd, like, this is one of the big problems we're talking about, you have to win home games, right? And Penn State has, every year, has the worst home court in the league. It's barely an advantage. So all of your home games are toss-ups, basically. You might as well be playing a neutral court game. This is why they play all these other games all over the place. They'll try to sneak in a game in Philly. They'll try to play up in New York. They're playing North Carolina State in Atlantic City. Like, this is the problem. You know, I mean, it's a completely different conversation, but this is the problem with Penn State, is you can't win in the league when you don't have a home court. And this week, I think we'll probably prove that again.
They're undefeated at home. Beat an ACC contender, mm-hmm. Maybe not contender, second tier contender. Let's see how they do against Indiana.
But let's see what the crowd is like.
Indiana is not really an offensive juggernaut right now, and Penn State, I think, is a legit defensive team early on.
Well, I'm gonna tweet at you on Tuesday night when the camera pans out and shows 5,000 empty seats at Bryce Jordan. I'm not saying they can't win there.
We'll probably be sitting right next to each other, so you can just tell me.
Where are you on Wednesday? Oh, that's right, Northwestern.
Tuesday.
Oh,
we'll be in Evanston. Oh, yeah, boy.
I need
who do you,
go,
who,
need
who do you have next? Who do you have next? This is a rough one here.
At number 13, I have my favorite squad in the league, Rutgers, checking in. I like this team. I think they play their asses off, first of all. Losing Corey Sanders was addition by subtraction. And I thought they played Michigan State well, and the win at Miami is really, really impressive, and there's no shame in losing to Michigan State at home. This is a team that's going to annoy a lot of Big Ten teams this year. I don't think anyone wants to play them because it's not going to be a good win, but it's only a bad loss, but they can beat a lot of teams, if that makes sense.
It won't be fun to play them, but I don't think any coach in the league would complain about having Rutgers show up twice on their schedule, considering the alternatives.
Right, I don't disagree, but it's like that team that can beat you that gets you nothing for a win.
Yeah, it's too bad. This is going to be one of the better Rutgers teams, but the rest of the league is all so much better that they're still going to be stuck in the cellar. And then we wrap it up with Illinois, who has wins over Evansville and Mississippi Valley State this year and lost by 15 at Nebraska. They have only played 3 home games, which is their schedule is just
a disaster.
Even their home game, their home game against Ohio State this week is played in Chicago and not in their home gym, which I don't understand how the Big Ten keeps taking home games from people.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a reason they're doing this in Chicago, but the whole New York City thing was also ridiculous. It is an interesting move, but they're just sort of rattled. Like, you can't really get any momentum when you're just going to Maui and just getting blown off the court. I mean, it's tough.
Yeah, not good. I'm sure Brad Underwood, as a second-year coach it's going to be time for a contract extension after year 3. This was not the year for this schedule, and I don't know, man. I mean, when you're going to have to get basically scraped up off the mat early, and they got UNLV, which I don't think is very good, but, I mean, I imagine they could go into Champaign and pull off a win. Like, this is a team that I feel like has the potential to at least do something in the league, but if you're going into conference play and you're, whatever, 3-13 or something like that, like...
Not good.
They're in trouble. That's a bad scene. And the how Brad Underwood let this schedule happen is kind of beyond. Like, you gotta pull out of stuff and change around. Like
Georgetown last year.
Yeah,
100%. No thanks.
100%. And they were right. Georgetown was right. As cowardly of a move as it was, like,
that was DePaul.
That was a team that did not need to go get smacked around. They played a bunch of nobodies, and they got smacked
around
later.
They started 10-1,
but
and then went 5-13 in the Big East.
Right, right. But Ewing knew what he had, and look, what's job number one for a coach? It's not to win games; it's to get the next contract. So you got to know what you're doing. There's a reason Richard Pitino has always scheduled the way that he has scheduled. And I believe he is on his second or third contract or something like that there, despite doing nothing. So that's a perfect way, I think, to wrap up this Big Ten Power Ranking this week. Dylan, do you have anything else to close out on?
I'm out of ammo today. This was quite an interesting
I think it was a great show. I think it was a great show, and I look forward to doing it again. Dylan has asked me to come up with a closing remark to tie things up each week, so I'm going to go back to my original, the OG from the old Wolverine beak. Folks, thanks for listening, and be sure to tip your bartenders and servers.